It's no secret the holidays are going to look a little different this year.
For sure. I'm already planning my virtual dinner parties and, of course, caroling sessions.
We may not be able to see everyone we love in person this year, but we can certainly let them know we're thinking of them in the form of memorable and personalized gifts.
Etsy remains the best place to get quality, handmade, and heartfelt gifts for the people in your life, inspired by the things they love.
There's so many choices, and Etsy sellers run the gamut, from home goods and decor to artwork, clothing, and jewelry. And the best part is everything is totally unique, from handmade pieces to one-of-a-kind vintage items.
So Megan, if you wanted to get me a gift, you know I love a nice cheese plate, so naturally I'm eyeing so many of the beautiful handcrafted cheese boards available from a variety of sellers.
And for our Housewives fans out there, there are amazing wine glasses, perfect to pair with your next pour and binge session this holiday season.
Wine and cheese at Shea Eric J. Mack. It'll take my quarantine snacking to the next level.
Etsy is making my holiday shopping so much more special this year, and I cannot wait to see my friends and family open their gifts.
This holiday season, shop Etsy to gift like you mean it. Go to Etsy.com/gifts to shop meaningful gifts for the people you love.
That's Etsy.com/gifts.
Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
All right, guys, we are here with two of the producers behind Bravo's Race in America special. I'm so excited to have them on today. Dorothy Turan and Leslie Farrell, how are you guys?
Hi, how are you guys?
I'm good, thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Of course, thank you so much for coming on. So, you know, before we get into the Race in America specials, our listeners always love to hear how producers kind of got into the positions that they are in. So I know it's probably quite a journey for you both, but could you each give us just a brief history of how you got started in your careers and what sort of brought you to where you are today?
I always knew that I wanted to be a producer long before, like even when I was a little kid, and I had no idea what being a producer was called, but I've always been a super type A personality. And I have always wanted to understand like the behind the scenes of how things work. And so I went to film school and studied film and television. It's so funny. So many people say, oh my God, I didn't know that FIT had a film program, but they did at the time when I was there. And I started, you know, my first job in television was working as a switchboard operator on the Maury Povich show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Speaking of reality TV, you know, back, this was after Maury had made the switch from hard news to, you know, completely salacious reality television.
You are not exactly, the father.
Exactly. And I just kept going. I worked in post-production for probably 4 or 5 years and always knew that I wanted to eventually transition into live action, which is being in the field, because I loved post, but I also wanted to understand what needs to happen in the field in order for you to bring good content back into post to make content or programming great. I just kept going. I line produced commercials for 10 years. I've also produced a couple of short independent feature films and produced music videos for a really long time and a couple documentaries, and then found my way into Unscripted.
And we are so grateful for that.
Thank you.
Leslie, what about you?
Yes. You know, it's so funny. So Dorothy started by saying that she kind of always knew she wanted to be a producer or something. I didn't know what I wanted to be, but I was bossy. I was born a bossy woman. So, you know, that kind of worked out for me. I've always been a writer. I started writing when I was young, and I really started my career in documentaries. And for many years, I was a documentarian, primarily for PBS, but then went on to HBO and made things for History Channel and all kinds of things like that. Lots of celebrity profiles when they were big, the hour-long celebrity profiles. I did many of those. I moved into Scripted and produced a scripted series for Spike Lee and his wife, Tanya Lewis Lee. So I've done kind of a lot of different things. Always sort of was an indie kind of person, though. I had my own little company for a while. I was working on, and this sort of ties in, so it's kind of funny. I was working on an independent documentary called Electoral Dysfunction. So,
oh, wow.
Interestingly, for the 2000,
yeah.
And we just happened to be covering the 2008 election. So we covered it from the conventions all the way through the Electoral College. So a little bit that's coming back to haunt me right now, but
for sure.
Story. During that time, lots of things were going on in the world and the sort of the whole world economy kind of tanked, I ended up going from making that film to the overseeing original programming for NYC Media, which is kind of like a little pseudo PBS station in New York. From there, Bravo gave me a call one day and I went to Bravo. And that was my first foray actually into unscripted. And that's how Dorothy and I met. I was on the network side, the executive in charge of The Real Housewives of New Jersey, Manhood with Children, and Thicker Than Water. And those were all shows that Dorothy was overseeing on the production company side. And that's how we met.
Right. I love your intertwined Bravo history. But then talk a little bit about the, you know, partnership that you guys have now with Lauren Grace Media. I love the backstory there, how, right, Leslie, you kind of tricked Dorothy into it a little bit.
The other way around.
Other way around. That's what it was.
Dorothy definitely tricked me. It wasn't a kind of sorta. I just want to say that. But now let her do it.
I listen, and whenever Leslie says this, when we do interviews, I proudly stand by it and say I absolutely tricked her because she is such a brilliant, phenomenal woman. However I could get her, I was going to. So I totally accept that. Leslie and I, of course, you know, worked on Jersey Housewives, but had also worked on a few other Bravo shows before that. So Leslie and I worked on Manzit with Children and Thicker Than Water. I was on Jersey for almost 7 years and Leslie was on for a little over five. So in all of that time, we really had been through the fire together. You know, when you are one of the executive producers on one of unscripted television's biggest juggernaut hits, you go through them, you know, you go through some stuff after 7 years. And we had just been through the fire together, and she being our network executive, and we just really connected. And I felt so much, synergy and kindred spiritness with her, and felt like she was such a incredible reflection of myself and so many of the things that I wanted to do and so many of the stories I wanted to tell. You know, when she left, I said, Leslie, you know, I'm thinking about starting my own production company. Will you consult for me? And I was like very low key about it. I was like, no big deal. Just like a couple phone calls here and there.
The net is about to fall over my head.
Get your advice and like, you know, like no worries. Cause she was, you know, she had moved and she and her husband were like having the best time. And then it quickly became like, we were owning this company together, and that's what happened. And so now Leslie and I are officially co-founders of Lauren Grace Media.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just add one thing? I never saw it coming. It was incredibly stealthy. I just, but I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy. So just, you know, I want to add that.
I was stealth. It's fair joke.
I'm impressed. So what are some of the projects that you guys are working on now?
Well, we've just literally finished our second installation of Race in America for Bravo. Every Vote Counts, which aired. So that was really, really, really super exciting. And we're so thankful and honored to have been able to do that. So, you know, we really are just honestly recovering from that. We have a very full development slate, which we are, you know, working on and chipping away at every single day. And so we're super excited. We've got a bunch of, you know, stuff coming up that we can't really talk about yet, but that you'll hear about in the world soon. So we're really having such an incredible time together. We really are having just the best time.
We really are. And we could give a couple hints, no details. We have some unscripted things in the transgendered space that we're looking at. We're also looking at some really cool, fun people, strangely, in the cat space. Yes, that's what I said, cat. Really, really fun. We also have some scripted things. We have scripted crime drama, right? Like a sci-fi crime drama and some comedy. So it's across the board where the things that we are developing, but all of them, how they tie together. And this is one of the ways that Dorothy really, when she came to me with this, really spoke to me, is that all of the stories that we're trying to tell, somehow we are trying to have not only perspective, but a perspective from a source that maybe their story hasn't been told as often as others.
So for Race in America, A Movement, Not a Moment, you both felt very strongly about having a multi-ethnic panel for this show. So why was it so important for that particular conversation? Leslie, do you want to go first?
Yes, sure. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. We thought from the beginning it was very, very important to have, when we're talking about race, to have a multi-ethnic panel, because race and racism is not a Black problem. It's an American problem. And so we thought it was really important that we had voices from different backgrounds, different coasts, different ethnicities, so that everyone could come together. And our hope and goal for that show was that we could be an example of how we can have open dialogue on about sensitive topics in a safe space. That was important to us. The other thing that was really important was everybody on that panel, and this is to be true later as well, had what I like to think of as authority, meaning that they were already vocal in this space. They were talking about race. They were, you know, they were opinionated publicly. They were working, they were protesting. They were, you know, out front. And that was also really important because we wanted to have people that really had been thinking about these issues and were able to really go deep and be vulnerable and open, because this is such a difficult subject for Americans, all of us, to talk about in mixed crowds. And so that was really a goal. Hopefully we did that. That was a goal there.
Leslie said it all. It just was really important for us to have a very inclusive conversation, because you can't get to the root of racism without, you know, having everybody be a part of that conversation and being a part of that work.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you want to talk a little bit about the different approach that you took for Our Vote Counts? Because that was an all Black panel for this special.
Yes, it was. What we decided with Our Vote Counts is that the African-American community has such a unique relationship and a historical experience with voting. We felt like for this one, it was important to really let the voices of our Black Bravo talent and NBC Universal talent really speak to that, in part because it's a shared experience, and also in part because we felt like it was important for our Black talent to be the only voice in the conversation. One, because the shared experience in Black history in terms of voting is so specific and unique. And also, we thought it would be helpful for everybody, no matter what race or ethnicity you were, to hear that perspective from them. So that's why we did something different this time. That
I would just add to it, what, you know, in our discussions about who should be on the panel, when we talked about this, like you said, when we did the first half, you know, A Movement, Not a Moment, it was important we wanted everyone to understand that this is a broad American problem. Voting, like Dorothy said, there are very specific experiences with different ethnic groups, right? And Black folks have a very specific history with voting in this country and very specific experiences. We really thought that, you know, if we had a multi-ethnic panel for that discussion, it would be a much broader, very different conversation. And we felt like in some ways we wouldn't be able to really hone in on some of the issues that are happening with voting in America, and that which is now translating to different ethnic groups. We're seeing voter oppression and suppression in across the board in some way now that we never saw that before. But I think to understand that and to understand the history of groups that have done those sorts of things, we needed to hone in on the Black experience for that to really resonate, for people to be able to have a historical perspective. And that's why we decided that this panel should be all African-American, to bring out that sort of historical truth and unfortunate truth of some of the things that have happened around voting in this country.
Absolutely. And it's so important, because I feel like so many people, you know, don't realize that. And I think the one thing that's really interesting about these specials is that, you know, we're really talking about the reality of what's going on. And as much as Bravo is a reality TV, you know, network, right? Like, people come to Bravo for the escapism. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, putting this reality right in front of the masses, you know, and why it's so important for people to not shy away from these conversations and really kind of face it head on?
Absolutely. Dorothy, if you don't mind, I'll take the first part of this. That's why that gets back to what I was saying about authority. Right? We needed to make sure that the people on the panel in both parts had experiences and had been thinking about that, because these are our Bravo celebrities, right? These are the people, like you said, we go to for escapism, or we go to because we want to judge this person and, you know, or we like the way they dress or whatever it is. So for Bravo audiences, for us to create a show that would appeal to Bravo audiences, we needed to make sure that when the people on those panels, even though they are your Bravo celebrities, they are those people, that they have this aspect of their lives that maybe hadn't been brought out before, or maybe it had. Some of the women from Potomac, you know, Giselle and Dr. Wendy, part of that was covered actually. And so maybe people were aware of that, but maybe not so much some of the other people on the panel. So I think that that's, you know, we really thought a lot about that. Like, how do we make shows that are of this sort of really serious nature, but make them appeal to Bravo audiences? And I think that's part of it, is when you get to that truth, and that's the thing I love so much about Bravo, especially coming from documentaries. Bravo, one of the amazing things about Bravo programming is whatever it is, I don't care how silly or not silly it is, it's always really trying to get to the truth of human intention and personality. And, you know, and that's, we try to keep that tradition, even though we were talking about subject matter that's very different and very new for Bravo audiences.
Leslie is completely right. You know, it was about having our talent talk about their personal stories, because by telling their personal stories, you are engaging the audience about a topic that's this serious without making them feel like they're being lectured, or making them feel like, you know, they're in school and there's something that's being forced upon them. Because when you hear Zuri Hall, or you hear Justin Silvestri talk about the experiences that they've had, and Zuri talks about the experience her father has had, you know, doing backbreaking work, that feels different when it's someone that you feel like you know. And audiences certainly feel like they know our NBCU talent. So I think the power and the key to being able to talk about these kinds of very serious issues with at a destination where people come to kind of get away from it all is to couch it in their favorite celebrities talking about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of Bravo Labs, I know that Candy was also involved in helping to put these specials together. So can you talk about her involvement in the process?
Sure. So Candy was, you know, Candy, hats off to her in that, you know, Candy shared with Bravo, you know, at the very, I think it had to have been at some point in very early June, after the country was reeling from George Floyd's murder and the world seeing it. And, you know, Candy said to Bravo, like, you know, there are so many Black Bravo talent that are part of so many different shows under this network umbrella. You know, it seems it's important that Bravo have a voice in this very, very important conversation. And Bravo really took her up on that and you know, came to Leslie and I with the idea of really having these conversations. So it was a great opening to be able to really dig into these topics.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, as we move forward from this presidential election, what's one of the key messages from the Race in America special that you want to share with our listeners? Like, what's one takeaway that has really stuck with you both?
For me, I would say so many things, right? Like, especially today of all days, for us to be having this interview.
I know.
As who our next president is seems to be hanging in the balance since last night. But I think for me, the most important thing I think from Every Vote Counts is really just that. It's that every vote really does count. And I know that sounds super cliche, but everyone's voice really matters, because a lot of times I think when we see how incredibly divisive the country is right now, and how divisive politics seem and feel right now, it's easy for people to forget that their vote really has power, right? Because it's so easy to say, ugh, it's not going to matter. And I think if anything, our vote counts shows that it really does matter. And even as we have this conversation today, as you know, electoral votes from all around, from so many states, are still being counted, every vote really does count. For me, I think that's what was super important.
I would say for me that, although that is very important, to make another point, I think that bringing out, we made a point of doing this because we believe this, local elections. We have made the presidential election the Super Bowl, and everyone pays attention to it. But in many ways, especially for people of color, but really for anybody, the presidency is obviously important, but local elections really affect daily lives, from education to zoning to police, but to mayors and then your state congresspeople. But when it comes to making sure we have fair and open elections and that people abide by the rule of law, that is often, most often, the local elections affect that. So we can't emphasize more how important it is to vote every single time. So if it's every other year, for some people, depending on when their mayors are and all that, you know, you could end up voting every year. But you got to get out there and you have to vote, because those are the people that then move up the chain. And if you're voting for them as mayor, next thing you know, maybe they're a state rep and then on to, you know, federal. And these are people then that you believe have your best interests at heart wherever it is that you live. You know, you end up having a say in the federal government. And I think that we have lost to a large extent in this country the understanding that local elections may be the most important elections.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's funny. My dad always makes this joke about presidents being temporary employees, right? Like that you need to start paying attention at the other levels of where you can have influence and where your vote really does matter. It's not just, oh, every 4 years, we got to get out and vote. There are so many other opportunities to make your voice heard, and people need to remember that that's important.
So true. So true. Absolutely. And hopefully that message got out from this special. We really tried to drive that message home.
Yeah, of course. Okay, well, obviously, I have to ask about Real Housewives of New Jersey, because you guys were working on the show for some major moments. So, you know, I guess we could start with maybe Teresa's return from prison and what it was like being with the family at such a, you know, critical time.
Yes, Teresa's return from prison, probably one of the most intense shoots I ever have produced ever. You know, it was really interesting. You know, the show had been off air for, you know, a couple of years or a little over a year because Teresa was serving time at that point. And so there was so much anticipation about bringing her home, you know, from fans. And obviously it was a huge part of the show. It actually was the beginning of season 7. So what was so interesting about that, one of the many things to me, was that normally when you are producing any reality show, but particularly Housewives, usually it's at the middle of the end of the season when you're having this really huge, what we call tent poles, that it's like this thing that you're building to all season long. And you use so many creative storytelling tools to build the suspense to get to that moment. Well, this was, bringing Teresa home was completely the opposite. We brought Teresa home the second week that production started on season 7. And so we were totally flipped in reverse. So it was just, you know, really intense time. It's no one had really ever had to deal with trying to film on prison grounds and getting access and all of those things. And then there was just, you know, the frenzy of paparazzi. I mean, we slept for like 2 hours in a hotel that was like 5 minutes away from the prison. And when we got to, when we got on the grounds of the prison, maybe 600, I have no idea. Like, there was just endless paparazzi everywhere. And traditional news outlets as well. So just trying to like navigate all of that and trying to do that all with having Teresa like not be seen and just try to like get her into a vehicle and like get her home safely was, it was really, really something.
You know, as the network executive, I was very calm and quiet and comfortable in my office.
A little different.
But, you know, like with anything, for all of these sort of wild, crazy moments, not for all of them, sometimes I'm there, but mostly it's Dorothy and team keeping me abreast. Sometimes the phone calls are amazingly calm and saying, okay, this is what we're dealing with. And then we, you know, we just have to talk about logistics and what's going to happen and what are you getting? And don't forget to get this and get that. And then other times, you know, it's a little more wild. Like we need, you know, approvals immediately because something is going on.
I said, or security.
Or security. Yes. Or security. So it's a very different experience for me. But that was a huge moment. I mean, and the storytelling of it and having everyone watching, you know, in the cast really paying attention and go and, you know, and doing their phone trees and is she home yet and all of that. I mean, that's all real stuff, right? Like that was happening at that moment and they were worried about her and all the paparazzi, you know, to get her home, you know, and safely and excited that she would then finally be home. So, you know, kudos to really, honestly, the production team for capturing every aspect of that. You know, the moment that Teresa walks in her kitchen and sees Joe,
I have chills.
Right? That comes through the screen at you.
And it's so funny, Leslie, you say that. I was standing right behind Teresa when, you know, Joe is sitting there. And he's, you know, being Joe and he's like not getting up right away. And he's at the table and he's like, hey, honey, welcome home. And Teresa puts both of her hands over her face and like the girls come bolting down the stairs. And, you know, Adriana's like shrieking at the top of her lungs. I mean, I don't think that there was one camera person, one producer that was dry eyed. So it was a really, really powerful moment and a powerful day.
Yeah, no, of course. And I mean, even thinking of last season, I feel like, you know, our heartstrings were just being tugged at every moment that, you know, Teresa would talk to Joe and the girls would talk to Joe. And, you know, the trip to Italy that they took for you guys, did that feel like closing a major chapter in Jersey history?
It didn't at the time. I think now that you're saying it, Eric, as reflecting back on it, it certainly was. You know, we had been in this, you know, if you're talking about since Teresa came home.
Yeah.
We had spent 4 years being with this family at every significant moment, moments that were joyful and moments that were incredibly painful for them. And so, you know, we kind of were on such a roller coaster for such a long time. You don't really like process like exactly whatever the next scene or the next trip means. But certainly like, you know, taking Teresa and the girls to Salerno in Italy where Joe is living, or I think he's still there. It was the same type of moment in a way, because, you know, Salerno is like two city blocks. Like it's so small. And where Joe's grandmother lived, which is where he was staying, it's just like you've got to walk up all of these stairs to get you like further and further high up on the mountain, which is where, and no cars can even, cars aren't even allowed because cars can't just, there's no traction to get a car up that steep. So we were like on foot walking up all of these stairs.
Wow.
With the girls trying to get them to the top with their dad. And then, you know, I was actually with Teresa and the girls and our showrunner, Luke, doing this like trek to get up there. But then we had advanced other producers to, you know, hide Joe and tuck him away so that what you got was exactly what we saw, which is that reveal when the girls, like, they see the house and they don't see him. And then Joe kind of peeks through that little curtain and you know, really, it's so funny. I mean, Adriana shrieked almost the same way that she did when her mother came home 4 years before, followed by Melania doing the same. So it was, again, you know, there were no dry eyes. We were exhausted, but it was all worth it to be able to see that family, be able to come together like that, and for their girls to be able to see their father.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, from the closing the chapter perspective, I think all of us as viewers were sitting there and waiting for Teresa and Joe to have this conversation of like, what happens next? Like, are you guys going to try to make this work or is it over? And I think we've seen Teresa grow so much since her return from prison that we were all just like waiting with bated breath, like what's coming next? Like, did you guys suspect in that moment that their relationship was just, that was it? It was over?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that Teresa was always really transparent when she was back home in New Jersey before we took the trip, saying she didn't know, you know, she said she needed to get there and see him. She hadn't seen Joe in over 3 years other than, you know, seeing him in prison in this really obviously stressful climate is not a real place to be able to gauge anything. And so she always was honest in saying she didn't know how she was going to feel or how he was going to feel. But I will tell you that once we got there, I have to say, you know, Joe and Teresa they really do love each other from a family perspective. And what I mean by that is like, yes, everybody was anticipating this big conversation and we got the big conversation on that trip, but that's not what Teresa or Joe, to be honest, was focused on when we got there. Like those girls, it just changed. They just, They had been waiting for their father for so long, and Teresa wanted them to be with their dad because she knows how much they love their father. So Joe and Teresa really, it really was about the kids for a vast majority of that trip. You know, we waited, we were there, I think, 5 or 6 days, and we really waited like till day 4 to really get them to sit down and have that conversation, because it, you know, we just wanted to watch the family play out in terms of enjoying each other. Joe had missed so many of the milestones that the girls had had. So it was just like, you know, there just wasn't enough time in the day for them to catch up with their father. And Teresa was catching Joe up on all the things that were going on with the girls too. So we knew the conversation was happening, but we were very patient for it, because what was important to us, you know, them, was to respect that this was like really a family, and, you know, they weren't actors, like this was happening for real.
Yeah, God, I'm getting verklempt over here.
I also want to add, I wasn't there for that last season. I was gone. Okay. But I just, for the seasons prior to that, with Teresa coming out of prison and then Joe going in, you know, she changed so much. You know, when you think about, here's a woman, you know, raised very traditional marriage, her husband goes away, she becomes the single mom, she's got to figure out, how do I support my kids? How do I be mother and father to them? Like Dorothy was saying, you know, Joe missed a lot of milestones, which means Teresa had to do everything for them. I really think, and this is just my opinion, that Teresa couldn't have known for sure what she wanted to do until she saw Joe again, because I don't think she fully knew how much she had grown until she saw him again.
Yeah, wow.
You know what I mean? She had to process really what that growth period was for her. She was a very different person by the time she got to Italy from that woman that came out of prison that day. And I don't think she could have really fully understood that until she was there with him. And
absolutely.
So that's just my two cents.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great observation. I think it's so true. You can almost see it in her eyes, right? I feel like people who have been watching Jersey from the beginning and know Teresa so well, like we all really felt that shift in kind of who she was fundamentally.
That's right. That's right.
Wow. Well, Leslie, you also worked on early seasons of Southern Charm, correct?
Yes. I came on season 3. So I did 3, 4, and 5.
Okay. So how have you seen that show evolve over the years, like being working on the show and then knowing, especially with this particular season, and there's definitely a different tone in, you know, what we're going to see based on like the super tease and everything and the episodes we've seen already.
You know, it's so funny because Southern Charm, when it first came on, was, you know, kind of different for Bravo in the sense that it was, you know, sort of putting the male story first, although you had Cameron who, you know, keeps everybody in check, but it was really kind of a different show for Bravo in that sense. And although very refreshing and obviously has done really, really well, you know, it was really this, I think the first 2 seasons, probably, I didn't work on them, but just having gone back and looked at them, they were trying to figure out what this group of people were. And I think we really hit the stride in 3, 4, 5, and, you know, and 6 with, the group of people that we had, and Catherine, you know, she really did just work her way into this group of people. That was all sort of unfolding on camera. No one could believe it, quite frankly, you know, and they became the story. And so, you know, as she matured and, you know, Thomas going through all of the issues he's gone through, you know, it's just, I think it's just interesting. I feel like in many ways they all were growing up on camera before our eyes, which sounds weird because they were all adults in the first place, except for Shep. I mean, let's face it. I love him too. Right. I really do. He's a great guy, but he is never, and he's committed to never growing up. So that's just who he is.
Yeah.
But, you know, like even I could say that, you know, like even about Craig, he was very lost in the beginning. Remember, he used to lie all the time. He lied about so many things. We didn't know what was true with him.
Right.
And Shep would try to catch him in the lies to try to help him, whether you agreed with how he did it or not. You know, who knows? But look at him now. He has actually turned that sewing pillow venture into something.
I know, who knew?
What the heck is going on here, you know? So I find that really interesting. I love the show so much. I still love it. I just thought it was so interesting that we get inside of these men who are still trying to figure out who they are. They're all scamps and all that. But trying to figure out who they are. And I think that it was just such a great window to me into the male mind, which you don't necessarily see on the other shows because they're focused on things. They're focused on different things. It's such a fun show. It really is.
I know, I do love Southern Charm. Could you each share with us maybe a favorite moment with a housewife or a Bravo celebrity, whether it was on camera, like something that happened on camera or even off that we might not know about? Dorothy, you want to go first?
Oh, whew, that's a tough one. I'm thinking of all the countries and all the places and all the things that we've done.
Wait, you think, Dorothy, and I have one that I just like. This was before reunion, like the night before a reunion or whatever. And we were out, we were over at the hotel where all the ladies were staying. And we were sitting in this, I don't know, it almost felt like the rec room. It wasn't a rec room, but it was, I don't know, some sort of just, wasn't a conference room because we had couches, but it was just sort of a room that they had there at the hotel. And I remember Melissa coming in, and I think that, I don't know if people realize this, she was just so sweet and playful and youthful in a way that I think she doesn't always come across on the show. She feels a little more reserved sometimes. And, you know, she sat on the floor with no shoes on, and she's, just, you know what I mean? Like, it was like girlfriends. It was really, really fun. I think that was, it was just a simple moment, but it just struck me as the sweetness in her really came out. And I was worried that sometimes we don't get to see that.
Yeah.
Softer side. Yeah.
The softer side. Yeah. Dorothy, did you think of one?
I did. And I actually thought Leslie was going to say what she made me think. I feel like it was season 9 reunion. And so just as Leslie said, you know, we, for the seasons that I oversaw the show, we shot the reunion at a soundstage out in Westbury, Long Island. And we typically stayed at the hotel a night or two before the reunion, just to, because they're like, you know, 500 million details and all of that. And so historically, what I did was take the showrunners and the network to dinner the night before the reunion, just like as a catch up. And it's became like this kind of tradition that we did every year. And so I had booked like a big room and they kind of like made the room, because there were so many of us, into dinner for us, but it was like in a private space. And so Leslie, I feel like you had gotten there then. So Leslie and Noah and I and so many of the producers, Luke was there in the production team, and we're having this really private dinner with just us, and the doors were locked. And I look up and the door opens, and there's this like shadowy looking figure with a hood on that like has their head down, and they're walking towards our dinner table. And I stopped eating. Like, I remember like holding my fork like midair, and I was like, what is happening? And the security is upstairs. and it was Jennifer Aiden in a boxing robe.
Oh my God. Yes.
Oh my God.
Jennifer Aiden. She's got her head down, right?
Yes. So
and her hair is back. You don't know if it's a woman. You don't know if it's this man. You don't know who it is. And so this shadowy figure in a robe, in a like the silk boxing robe with boxing gloves, comes in, and she lifts her head up, and it's Jennifer Aiden. And she's like pretending to be a boxer. And she's got this robe that she said she ordered off Amazon, that she had RHONJ in like big glitter letters, sequin letters on the back.
Of course.
With her name, right? Of course. With her name on the front. And I have to tell you, and it's funny, then the next morning she wore, and this is why she really did this, like she wore it because she wanted Andy to see it. Because, you know, every reunion before we start, Andy comes in and does a check-in with all the ladies in each of their rooms. Becomes part of the packages. But we got the first like preview of this robe, and I was like, only Jennifer Aiden would bust into a network dinner with the production company in a boxing robe with like RHONJ and boxing gloves.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
So
that's a moment that no one ever saw, you know, in terms of being on television, but was really, really memorable and funny. Jennifer's always such a good sport.
Oh, I love that. So something tells me maybe she had had a little bit of tequila before that, because we know she gets a little crazy after tequila.
A little bit. But Jennifer is really so funny. She's honestly very funny first thing in the morning without tequila. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. More of a morning person. Okay.
Yeah. She actually is a morning person. She's just really funny.
She is. I mean, she just is hilarious. I mean, no kidding.
Well, before we wrap up, I want to talk a little bit about the podcast that you guys launched, Producers Confidential. Tell everyone what it's about and actually how it originated, because I like kind of how it started.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Producers Confidential, Dorothy and I host. It started because Dorothy, once we had decided we were teaming up and starting our company, I think it was a month later, COVID. Everything shuts down. We're like, oh my gosh. We were starting our development slate and all those things. We had no idea when could anyone go into production again. I had been already planning a podcast, which was completely different, and I had not launched it or anything. And so I thought, well, gosh, maybe we could at least do a podcast. So I go to Dorothy, and I was a little nervous because we hadn't actually worked in this venture yet together. And I said, okay, so, you know, it's COVID and we have to stay inside and we can't go out and shoot. I was thinking, what do you think about if we started a podcast? We're producers. We have a lot of friends in the business in front of and behind the camera. I love the making of kind of stuff, you know, and I think a lot of people do. How fun would it be if we talk to people in front of behind the camera to find out behind the scenes about what it's like to be in the business, what it takes to make it in the business. We can talk about, you know, breaking down scenes or, you know, films and all kinds of things. And I go through this whole spiel thinking the whole time, Dorothy, at the end of this, Dorothy's going to say, what are you, nuts? You know, and she's like, I love that idea. So Producers Confidential was born, and we've had a great time. We've had on Shaquille O'Neal, Felicia Rashad.
Wow.
Yes, Felicia Rashad, Vanessa Williams, from Goodfellas, Paul Sorvino. We've had Art Bell, the man who created Comedy Central, has been on our show. And we've had people behind the scenes, like really, really cool people. Kevin Ladson, who's our next podcast, by the way. We're launching a whole podcast series with him called The Making Of. He's a prop master, and he has worked on every Spike film since Do the Right Thing. He did 7 seasons of 30 Rock. He's the guy in the movie Signs, which is one of my favorite all-time sci-fi movies. He's the guy, you know, the scene with the kids and Joaquin Phoenix under the stairs when they have on the tinfoil hats?
Oh, yeah.
Though Kevin made those hats the shape of his own head.
Oh my God. Came up
with that, and those are the hats, the tinfoil hats you actually see in the movie. I mean, how cool.
That is so funny.
I know, right? And so that's our new podcast coming up. And so, yes, we've become podcasters in all the craziness of COVID and trying to produce and just loving television and movies. So we're having a ball.
Right. That's so cool.
Yeah. And the thing that I will say to that, to put a button in that, Eric, is that what is the most fun and hysterical, we record video as well, and use the video for promos on social. And Leslie and I are the two least competent technical people ever. And so instead of trying to you and Emily are so, you guys are so like, this is what it is. You guys are so like on it and so together with it. Leslie and I, our cold opens on the podcast, I'm always like, Leslie, the speaker's not working. It's not working. Leslie, something is wrong. It's not working. And she's telling me to plug it in here and plug it in.
And I'm like, plug it in. Turn it on.
And Leslie's like, Dorothy, it's not turned on. And I'm like, oh. So we just have so much fun, and we totally just play into the fact that we barely know what we're doing. And it's really fun. And I think our listeners really enjoy that, that transparency and fun too.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like breaking the fourth wall, right? That's a trend on Bravo right now. And I think people appreciate that little glimpse behind the curtain and just being like, oh, these are real people, you know?
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Exactly. No, we cop to all of our weaknesses. We have no problems with that because, you know, that's part of what it takes to make shows, whatever they are. And I think that's fascinating. I love behind the scenes anything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think our listeners will love that too, because anytime we have producers or other Bravo execs on the show, they are always so interested in, you know, the journey of how you guys got to where you are and just all of those behind the scenes elements. And we get so many responses from people when we do talk about episodes that break the fourth wall. So our fans love every aspect of our shows. So anytime that they can get that, you know, insider info, they absolutely love that. So I'm sure a lot of people will want to check that out.
Well, let's hope so. Producers Confidential, and it's on any place you get your podcast.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for chatting with me today. This has been so much fun. I feel like I've learned a lot. I love the Jennifer Aiden Rope story. That's so amazing. And anytime you guys want to come back on our show, you are absolutely welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. This has been really fun, and you guys are great.
Really fun. Thank you so much. We'd love to come back one time. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Dorothy. Thanks, Leslie. We'll talk to you soon.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, missing.